The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we slide into a Wednesday. Gary, I don't know. Where do we start?
Well, I wanted to say something, but people might take it as true. And so I wanted to make sure I put in the disclaimer that it's not true. But I just wanted to say that.
Yeah.
I remember the good old days of college when I was doing acid and listening to the Nirvana album.
Yeah.
I had to go. Yeah. I had to go beyond pot. It was this, you know. Yeah. It was the
right.
We're going back to the '70s when I was
right.
when I was in college. What do you, I have no idea whether Kurt Cobain was born at that time.
I think he was born, but I think he was just a kid at that point.
By the way, I'm referencing Kamala Harris.
Yeah, right.
Couple of things here that just I just go, come on. You know, when the president, I mean the whole thing when the president was at in El Paso and my rally is bigger than yours,
yeah,
and then it goes on social media where everybody is like completely obsessed with it,
right?
And I didn't get a chance to say this on yesterday's show, but so I'll say it today. It's like the only thing that matters is the polls.
Right.
Doesn't matter whether you can draw. Oh, it doesn't matter whether you can draw 80,000 to see you.
Right.
What matters is the polls, and the polls right now are looking good for the president.
Yeah.
That's the important. Polls, the only thing that matters is polling and elections.
And also, hey, Beto, he's messing with you.
Yes. So it's the substance of the argument, the polling, and then the voting that comes from the polling.
Yeah, you know.
That relates to the polling, not that comes from the polling. Relates to the polling.
I don't react this way every time he tweets something like that or every time, you know, there's any kind of message like that from the president. But sometimes in the back of my mind, I think to myself, all right, the guy's a multi-billionaire. He runs to become president. He wins. The entire world comes down on him. He doesn't flinch at all. And he's sitting there thinking, ah, man, what am I going to do today? All right, let's try and get some things done, but let's also mess with people.
Well, I had no problem. As I said yesterday, it was last week where I told you, oh, no, the president's going to do another rally again. Oh, no. Oh, mm-hmm. No. I don't want him in rally mode. I want him in State of the Union mode. I want him in the I'm staying in the White House until we get a budget deal mode where he was consistent and on message. And then, as I said on last night's show when you were gone, I was extremely impressed by the president, impressed what he did at the rally.
Right.
I mean, he was just on the talking points that we have talked about all the time, to be on those talking points and identify, accuse the other party of what you believe they are, that they are being controlled by the far left that's for open borders. By the way, go through a bunch of what Skater Bobby said at his rally, and tell me that you don't get open. We'll have some audio coming up later on. Tell me if you don't get open borders from that.
Right. I mean, I think it was on point. I saw, a couple of clips. I didn't take it all in, and I wasn't able to read every story on it, but I think overall the president was on point. When he announced that there was going to be a rally in El Paso, I said, okay, either bold move, and if he's on point at the rally, then it's a win. It's at least a check in the on the positive side, right? Win is, I think, a big word. But you don't stay on point. You go to El Paso, and it becomes something else.
Yeah, but I had no problem with the president stating that. I mean, I chuckled at that one. You know that when he talked about the size,
right.
The size of it. To me, it was the thing that I really get a chuckle out of is how it's then debated on social media for the next day.
People lose their mind over stuff like that.
That's what I mean. They lose their minds over it. It's like, no. Don't worry about that. Worry about how the substance of the issue, especially now, with because the Democrats are talking about the substance of the issues that they, the substance or lack of substance of issues that they care about.
Right.
However you want to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so judge how the polls, when you ask the complete question, what the polls look like, and judge what happens in elections. But right now, if you're going to make it, you know, what's more important, the polling is more important than the size of the crowd.
Right. Size of the crowd
can indicate that you have excitement, but as we saw from O'Rourke, it doesn't guarantee at all that you win any elections.
Right. Because if
you look at the size of the crowds of O'Rourke in Texas and compare the size of the crowd to Ted Cruz, who actually won it, wasn't mm-hmm. even close in mm-hmm. most of the rallies.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't even close.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't matter. So don't be so worried. Maybe it's a pride of point to some people. I don't know. I don't care. I care about winning elections. I care about getting the substance of the issues done. The imagery of whose crowd is bigger when I know it doesn't matter to me.
Well, you know, I always go back to early Aerosmith days when they've talked about it repeatedly about how they built their following. They just played every time they could. When you're doing something like this, you're trying to sell an idea. You've got to play in front of a crowd every time you can, but you're going to have to play the hits, which means in this case, you're going to have to go on and you're going to have to promote those ideas repeatedly. You're going to have to in those rallies, you're going to have to stay on point. And we talked about this at the beginning of the year. Then after, of course, the State of the Union address, stay on point from this point until Election Day. Go crazy the day after Election Day if you win again and tweet whatever you like.
You're a lame duck at that point.
Exactly. Because it really is about, you know, that message. And the bigger point is not that he gets the win. It's that there's a greater probability for all of us that support ideas that we want implemented as policy, that those ideas will get done. But if you think about border security, he's there, whether he's doing it or the discussion is doing it, I can't measure, but I know one thing, is that the sentiment is changing. Even on the wall, we saw that last year. Support was actually growing for the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got that momentum going for you. Use it, stay on it, don't change course. And I think at that rally, I think he did a great job at staying on course.
Well, and you weren't here yesterday, and we just talked about it a little bit in our pre-show meeting. But you know, yesterday there seemed to be a lot of depression when it was released some of what, especially the wall stuff of how much money was there, and then the depression continued today. And as I said yesterday, I said, look, I can't tell you how happy I am, because a lot of people believe like this is the end of the process, that if we don't get it now, we'll never get anything. If we don't get the whole thing now, well, it's a slow process. As I've said, 70% of the elections there, well, 70% of in the elections that I voted for, roughly 70% of the people that I voted for and issues I voted for didn't go through,
right?
Didn't win. It doesn't mean that I stopped trying or I stopped trying, you know, to message things and issues the right way. I'm extremely happy. The last 24 hours, when I saw the last 48 hours, when the polling came out, the president's approval rating. To me, this is the beginning of the argument. I know some of you disagree with me, but I believe that the Republicans blew it over the last 15 years in messaging on illegal immigration, and I believe the administration blew it the first 2 years of it. I believe the last month and a half, the president, and I don't, again, the only difference is he started to be on message, it seemed like, the week that John Kelly was gone. And I have no idea whether there's anything to do with it.
That's weird. But because I was thinking about that during our pre-show meeting. I didn't actually say it to you. But I said to myself, you know, since Mulvaney's been around, things have changed somewhat.
Look,
you're talking about the guy who was in charge and still is kind of overseeing the OMB. You know, I have no idea, but we know that from that point, there has been a definite, and I think a measurable shift in the behavior.
It was about 10 days before they got to the eventual, before the end of the shutdown.
Right.
Yeah. Where it seemed like the president, so it's almost a little over a month, I think, that was when the president seemed to, from nowhere, be right on message. And we stated it. We said, look, he's winning the argument over the last 10 days. He's winning the argument. He's on point on everything. He's not distracted by other things that are going on. He's right. And he has stayed and continued on that. The State of the Union was great. The rally, which last week I was saying, oh, no, oh, no. You know, one of the things that you and I said was that when the shutdown first happened, and when Sarah Huckabee Sanders came out and said, look, we don't need Congress, we're going to get the money on our own, and then the conservative media went, or the pro-wall, pro-Trump media went crazy at the president.
Mm-hmm.
You know, said he was caving, and everything. And at that point, then he said, okay, we have to get, you know, money for the wall. But still, the actual argument and the consistency of his argument wasn't there. It happened, you know, like we said, about 10 days before the end of the shutdown, where it seemed like the messaging was right there. But you and I both said he has no leverage. Well, you know something? He didn't have any leverage. But he, as I said on yesterday's show when you were gone, I believe that the leverage that he created over the last 4 weeks was him being on message. If he decides to accept this deal, he got 55 miles from a Democrat party that wasn't going to give him anything. Mm-hmm. Why did he get it? He got it because he effectively sold his message to the American people. You saw it in the poll numbers when people started coming his way on the substance of border security. You saw it the State of the Union address when the polling came out, and you saw it with the president's approval rating. Believe me, the leaders of the Democrat Party saw that. He created his own leverage. Like I said, it's not enough to get 2,000 miles, but the fact that he was able to get them to move, that's what I'm looking at. To me, everybody's looking at this as the end of, oh, it's the end now. We lost. No, this is just the beginning, and we're starting to win. Right. There's nothing I can do about the last 2 years of the administration, I believe, not effectively selling it. There's nothing I can do about the last 15 years. All I can look at and say, what are they doing right now? And right now, he is selling it.
Well,
and
here's the thing. He's getting on base.
He's
playing Moneyball.
He's getting on base. And by the way, I'll give the president this leeway. He's never been in politics. He was never in politics before. I expected this. I did not expect perfection from President Trump. Never did.
No.
And the fact is, if he does realize, because this is the longest that we have covered this president, that he has been on message consistently. I do not know another time. Maybe there was another time for a week, maybe 2 weeks. I don't know ever when the president for over a month has been so disciplined in his message. That's what wins you elections. That's what moves the needle in getting eventually getting legislation and getting more in a compromise with the opposition that you want. And so I look at it today, no matter what happens, is not the end. I look at this as the beginning and the president effectively selling not just that message, but a number of other different messages also. So while you have a ton of Trump supporters that seem to be, we're giving up, we're never going to vote for him again, whether it's the Ann Coulter people and other people out there, I look at it and I say, this is a president that's starting to learn how to effectively sell a message as a president of the United States. I like it. Now, I wish I could get a ton more of the border deal, but I got to deal with the hand, you know, the hands we've been dealt.
Right.
And what I see is great progress in this president.
What defeats political hatred? Being right.
Being right. And he's winning the argument on something that the Republicans for 15 years haven't been able to win because they haven't been willing to make the argument.
And many of them have been doing it for a long time.
Yep. We got a great show ahead. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Yeah, so when I look at this entire, whatever the president ends up doing here, and I was thinking yesterday, I you know, put on the political consultant hat when you were gone, Eric, and just said, okay, what might he do? What would I suggest? Well, either you fight for it and close down the government again, and how far are you willing to go? We know how far you're willing to go. We saw it last time. You're only willing to go as far as an airport slowed down. Are you going to go to that point again? Now, we'd people call and say, well, he should put in, just replace all the air traffic controllers with the military. Well, these, like Reagan did. Well, it's not the same situation.
Right.
These aren't air traffic controllers on strike that have walked off the job.
Right.
They're on the job. Mm-hmm. They're just calling in sick or quitting and looking for a new job.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if you wish to do that, there's no way the military air traffic controllers are ready when you call in 2 hours and can't make it into work.
Right.
It's not the same thing. So there's only a limit as to what he could go. But I said, so either you close the government and tell me what the end game is there. If I'm your political consultant, I'm going to ask that. Or the other thing is you accept this deal. You say we got 55 miles. We got $1.3 billion. We're going to get more in September when we continue the continuing resolution. And I'm going to declare a national emergency. And I'm going to get it from this side, too, and we're going to fight it in the courts if we have to, and we're going to fight it in Congress. We're going to fight it from both things. And, yeah, maybe I've made mistakes. Maybe the Republicans have made mistakes. But we're the only ones that you know are serious on wanting to have border security in this country. They're for open borders. We're not. You sell that, I guarantee you win.
Yeah, I don't think there's a problem with that message, especially if you take this and then parlay that into something in September and do something else, even if it goes to the courts, you're going to be seen as battling on all fronts.
Yep.
For Travel Centers of America, here is your forecast.
In the south, rains from yesterday pushing eastward will clear out for places like Mobile. Sunny and 62 today. Rain will be ending in New Orleans. Sunny and 61 degrees. For Atlanta, things are clearing out. 54 for the high today, 60 tomorrow. In the northeast and mid-Atlantic, Washington and Baltimore will see the return of sunshine today. Quite the different story as you move into just north of there in New York, where a winter weather advisory is out for much of the state. Rain and sleet expected in Manhattan, high today 43. For Boston, 2 to 4 inches of snow fell yesterday, light flurries overnight. In the Chicagoland area, watch for freezing rain and snow overnight. In the Pacific Northwest, for the states of Washington and Oregon, conditions favor additional snow to accumulate, even down into the lower elevations, as moisture associated with a low-pressure system lingers through the day. The National Forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
making overnight radio great again. Red Eye Radio.
Yes, we are, big guy. Thank you very much.
I hadn't heard that one yet. Well, 2 years into it, we finally come up with that one, huh?
Yeah, right on.
866-90 Red Eye, if you would like to get in on the show. And, you know, I still don't know. I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen. Maybe I missed it yesterday. I was real busy yesterday, but I didn't see. Did they ever? Do we have the specific? Well, until we have the piece of legislation, we're not going to know.
Yeah, there's really
until,
nothing,
they're, until
yeah.
they're ready to go with it. Yeah, I don't know.
We have to see what's in it before we can vote on it. you know, it was interesting because I was with I was away yesterday in Florida with the National Association of Truck Stop Owners, and there's a lot that goes on with the economy, and obviously they are kind of I almost said support group. They serve a supportive role. Their function is, of course, to serve the drivers out there fuel, food, resting, a place to rest. And all of that, and it's a very important role in the nation's economy. But the group is a lobbying group, right?
Mm-hmm.
So things were going down yesterday, and you could kind of tell. I mean, they're all about legislation. I mean, it's not a secret. It's, you know, we have conversations. You're going to hear podcasts on our website. In fact, some of those conversations from that. But as things were going down yesterday, you could the excitement in the room, the activity in the room, I guess, picked up. And it was just, I mean, because they're well connected with lawmakers.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way they were talking, and I'm the media, so I kind of had to, you know, turn my ear off a little bit and not intrude and, you know, and into their business as they were having conversations. I was kind of trying to butt out, if you will.
But still listen.
But I was telling you, I couldn't catch it, what they were saying. A, because I actually am hard of hearing, and B, I was trying not to be too obvious about it, but you could tell. And I had just gotten the alerts on my phone shortly before that, right? And so then there was this, you know, just a lot of, you know, back and forth between people on the floor there at this show in Orlando. And I thought to myself, well, where's the president, you know, on it, and what does it look like? Because it had just come out, right, that they have a, you know, they have the so-called gentleman's agreement on, you know, on something. And I thought, okay, what does that mean? Is that 5.7? Is that 2.5? Is that 800 million? Remember that was one of the numbers being thrown out. So what does it look like? And then we started hearing, you know, the numbers. And I thought, okay. And then we started seeing the quotes from the president in the cabinet meeting that he wasn't happy. But there was something, you know, beyond that. He was saying, well, I'm not really happy with it. But it is, you know, he is pleased that there was progress, in other words. I'm paraphrasing here, but there was a second half of that. But the question from that was, and my first question, and then in the media, I think Wall Street Journal and some of the others asking the question, all right, well, the question is, are you going to sign it from what you know right now? Not do you like the deal or do you kind of like the deal? The question is, will you sign it by Friday if it comes together, if the vote comes together? And it gets to your desk, do you plan on signing it based on what you know now? And we didn't get the definitive answer, but he didn't say no.
Well, was the not definitive answer, but clue in the tweet he put out last night where he said, we'll be getting almost $23 billion for border security. Regardless of wall money, it is being built as we speak. Is that the indication of where he's going? Because that's what I got by the time I woke up last night.
Right.
Is it looks like the president is moving in the direction where he will sign the bill and then try however he can to get the other money. And it's, you know, what you and I have been talking about, that you know, you start from, I look at every day as a beginning. You start from the beginning, and what are you selling today? I don't want to go back. You know, we've talked about the mistakes that we believe the Republican Party and the administration has made.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Wall Street Journal pointed out and said, why didn't the president ask for more money in the budget last year? He only hit the 5.7 recently, but he wasn't hitting it at the beginning of the year. Why wasn't he doing it way back then when he had a Republican Congress? So you can go back and you can look at all of that. And say, well, they still might have filibustered it anyway, and you still wouldn't have gotten it. Yeah, but your chances are greater when you have a Republican. So you can go back and forth and have that argument, but that's the past. There's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
You can only go from today on. And what has the president done? What have we seen this week? What have we seen over the last week of poll numbers? The president is convincing Americans it's right.
Yeah.
We said it the other day, and I'll say it again. This is a president where all of the white noise that he's been surrounded with is slowly moving away. Look at the whole thing yesterday. Oh, I just, by the way, did you see social media? You know, the Senate says there's no direct evidence that the president or anybody in his administration colluded with the Russians. And so I started seeing, but there's no evidence that he didn't. And I'm like, I actually saw that, and that fell flat really quick. But we're getting to the point a little bit, you know, 2 years in now, where what are we talking about? Because the Democrats have the House, and because the Democrats have been extremely vocal in the things that we want to do, where are we now? The white noise is slowly moving away right now, and what are we getting to? Exactly where Eric and I like it to be. The substance of the issues. What are the things that they are promoting? One of the great things that I saw yesterday, and I hope he does it, I hope he's sincere, when I read he had a sly smile when he said it, is Mitch McConnell stating that, well, yeah, we're going to put the Green New Deal up for, we're going to put it up for a vote.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just, social media blew up. But it's not legislation. It's not legislation. Excuse me. The Democrats introduced it as a bill. Mm-hmm. They can vote on it.
Mm-hmm.
You may say it's not legislation. They introduced it. They are the ones that put it into the process to be voted on. And what was it a couple of years ago? Remember when the Republicans voted on something that the Democrats put in again and the Democrats were going nuts saying, they're just voting on this for politics and politics only.
You guys put it up.
Well, yeah, and by the way, of course it's politics because it's the political arena, and they're all politicians, so duh!
Well, they introduced it because it was political in nature. They knew what they were doing.
Right.
They got called on it and then said, what was it, they were going to vote no or whatever it was on it. And they were, again, getting called on their own bluff.
And
by the way, we said this about... This so-called resolution, the Green New Deal, is a resolution. Well, but that's why you want to have the vote. Remember when Nancy said infamous Oval Office meeting on the wall? She said, well, Mr. President, you just need to have it. You know, the vote needs to happen. The vote needs to happen. Just have the vote so people will know where everybody stands. Well, on the Green New Deal, we need to just have the vote on... Even though it's a resolution, you need to have the vote.
Well, you need to have the vote in the Senate, and then when you see that the Republicans are willing to have a vote
mm-hmm.
on the Green New Deal, mm-hmm. and the Nancy Pelosi House is not willing to have
mm-hmm.
a vote on the Green New Deal.
Right.
I mean, that's the kind of thing.
Right.
Look, that's the kind of thing I love in politics, but the point is with the president, we're now to where I want the president to be. You're not in these side fights anymore. It's not just about fighting about everything. It's about fighting for the things that actually matter on the issues and winning the argument. As we said a few months back, well, he's fighting. Not enough to fight. You got to fight and win. You have to fight and win the argument.
Yeah.
And he won the election, as we have said, by identifying the problem and saying that he would fight for you to solve those problems. Now, when he was running, for political office, a lot of the solutions that he put out would change. But now that he's in office, we know where the president stands on most issues. The American public agrees with him on it. We have filtered through everything over the last 2 years. The white noise is starting to move away. It's moving into the background. It's not everything isn't on what Trump says in every tweet. Now it's on every tweet that Ocasio-Cortez puts out or Representative Oman puts out that might be anti-Semitic or whatever. You've got a ton of different things now in the white noise, and now we're getting more closer to what they think on the other side and what are the issues that the president is promoting. And like I said, I this is the best the president has done. I'm happy as can be because I know what I really want. I can't do anything about the fact that they couldn't get $25 billion for the wall. But as you said here, Eric, during our mid-show meeting, your people, we have asked the president over and over again, what's your end game?
Right.
You know, what's your end game? I think it's time now to ask, as you said, Ann Coulter, what's your end game?
What's the end game?
Close the government and do what?
Right.
What do you get out of it?
Well,
what's
the
end game?
And what do you think's going to happen? I'll tell you what's going to happen. They're going to get through one payday. And the president will reopen the government because there's not going to be any negotiation. What got done after? What got done? And when did it get done? Well, it's not, again, anywhere close to what the people on this side wanted. Not anywhere close.
Not close.
But it got done when the government was reopened. Look, I don't think that there are Democrats on Capitol Hill. I would think that, and it's hard to quantify, but if I were going to put a bet, I would say most Democrats probably believe, and maybe not the freshmen in the House, but most Democrats that have been on Capitol Hill for any time know that the president's not going to shut the government down for long. So why did they get a deal done? They got a deal done because McConnell was working the deal. They knew that they were losing the issue. You
they
see
were
the
losing,
polls.
Right.
And McConnell was working that, and I'm sure the president was helping him work that, saying you guys are losing on border security. Because we said it with the Democrats. Here's the thing. You're doomed if you do, you're doomed if you don't. You give him $25 billion today. And he's going to campaign on that until November 2020. You give him nothing today, he's going to campaign on that until November 2020. If you give him $1.3 billion today instead of $25 billion, he's going to campaign on that until 2020. You've given him the uphill battle. He was the underdog in 2016. You're allowing him to be the underdog incumbent on this issue that he wins the majority of Americans on.
What changed this was, I believe, when the polling came out that showed independents agreed with the president. Mm-hmm. And the vast majority of Americans, which means the vast majority of independents, agreed with him on the issue of illegal immigration and how to solve the problem. The president won at that point. You saw the president's approval rating going up. Democrats have seen it in their internal polling. As we said early on, the president had no leverage. He created his own. How did he create it? By talking about the substance of the argument and staying consistent on that message over and over and over again, and also stating this is what I plan to do, here's the challenges, here's the people out there in the field, here's what they say, and the other side, you're being led by the far left of your party that's for open borders. You want open borders, you want drugs to come into this country, you want the, and he made the accusation, and then when you make that accusation, you make them respond.
Mm-hmm.
And when the American people heard it, they said, we like what the president is promoting better. Independents like it. That's how you win elections. And so I look at this as the beginning. I'm very positive right now if the president can keep this up. And Mick Mulvaney, don't go anywhere.
Whatever you're doing, keep doing that.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. Now, I could be wrong, and if you're, by the way, he's Eric, I'm Gary.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just sorry, I'm just thinking about other stuff. But mm-hmm. but I could be wrong here, but I think that the polls back up that the fact that if Trump signs this deal, that he'll still keep the majority of his base together.
I think so.
I just don't see it going away. The polls don't show it going away. I think because he is messaging so well right now, and if he decides to do the whole national emergency thing, he covers it on both sides. Because remember, half of the people that are saying he can't cave here. He's got to call a national emergency. Remember, there are half the people that disagree with him on this want him to call the national emergency.
Right.
Not just close the government.
And will he do that to fight it on both fronts?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Oh, no. In 10 years, that 40-seat commuter turboprop from Merced to Bakersfield might not exist anymore.
What?
California we're talking about here. Well, Gavin Newsom, here's a headline. Gavin Newsom ditching California high-speed rail shows why Green New Deal, and you'll understand why I'm reading the headline here. I'll do it again here. Gavin Newsom's ditching California high-speed rail shows why Green New Deal is doomed.
Yeah.
In a Tuesday State of the State speech, Newsom, the former San Francisco mayor who ran on a bold progressive agenda, threw in the towel, saying that while they would be able to link Merced to Bakersfield, does that mean they're going to? Are they going to have a high-speed rail? Would it be adjacent to 99 that goes through Fresno? It's 163 miles long. A distance between those two cities, and it would go through Fresno. Merced,
that's
I believe,
a 2.5 hour drive.
Merced's like 83,000 people. Bakersfield, I think, is between 350 and 400,000. I'm guessing going through Fresno. Why?
Is there a secret? Do we need to know something about that?
Is there something that we're missing here?
Is there some kind of new gold rush going on? Some kind of grand conspiracy? What did we miss?
I actually yesterday had to go to the map and I had to look and go, what am I missing here? Why?
Right.
Just ditch the whole thing.
I'm willing to
consider the fact that I'm missing something here.
Right. If it warrants high speed rail. Look, does it warrant slow speed rail? Let's start there. Show me something that warrants slow speed rail. Remember on Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? You know, the little car, the rail car, flatbed rail car that has basically, it's a two man, you know,
right.
And you're working the lever in order to move it along. Let's justify that first before we get to high speed rail. I don't know. I don't know what I'm missing. I have no idea.
Look, at least, you know, when they're talking about the high-speed bullet train, which would be private, from what I know, right? Between Houston and Dallas?
Yeah, I think a lot of it would be private. Yeah. I think the biggest issue there was you know, the eminent domain thing.
Eminent domain.
Right, yeah.
At least you're talking a metro of 240 miles, mm-hmm. which would be two metros of what? 6 to 8 million people in each metro area?
Plus the stops along the way, yeah. Yeah.
I've said from the very beginning on that one, show me the business model on that. I don't see how it makes a profit.
Yeah, I don't know. And that's my concern, is that do you have one of those issues where, well, we built it, now we got to keep it going, which means we need to add public money to it. That's my concern, long-term, that it becomes something outside of the plant.
How many... How much would that bullet train, remember, they want to do it in 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So how many times could you stop it in order to get there in 90 minutes?
Mm.
Because what do you have to do?
Well, you have to stop at Buc-ee's. That's mandatory. You mean between Dallas and Houston is what you're referring to. That's what you're asking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're going to go the 240 miles and do it in 90 minutes,
mm-hmm. Well, Buc-ee's itself will take 90 minutes. Everybody knows that.
Well, that means you have to average what, 180 miles an hour?
Yeah,
or 160 miles an hour. Sometimes just doing it.
Depends
in my head.
On which way the wind is blowing and how fast.
Well, I mean, how many stops?
And when it leaves the station,
how long can you stop and keep that mile per hour up?
Well, your average drops dramatically when you stop.
Exactly.
Which is why the average rate of speed by cars 50 miles an hour, even though I'm driving 90, I stop at Buc-ee's.
Now that where they believe they can do it is because of it would be passive TSA security,
mm-hmm. It's just a train. Go ahead.
Right for that and until something happens. I mean, I'm just saying this is how we work as a society.
Mm-hmm.
Until something happens, we have passive security. When it happens, then there's no longer.
Yeah. Reed, and now we're taking the shoes off.
And the company is stating we would be just beneath airfare.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have passive security, because that's where you're really beating the airfare because of the security. You're beating in that particular, you know, in that route, Houston to Dallas, mm-hmm. is the fact that we can get you there in 90 minutes. You don't have to be at the airport, you know, an hour and a half before. You don't have tarmac time. But you've got to be able to meet that 160 to 180 miles per hour average. Otherwise, you can't get there in 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of blows the whole thing. If you can't do the 90 minutes, it's useless. Because what you're saying is, we'll take you by train and we'll save you this amount. You're saving time by doing
well,
what you're doing.
But therein lies the problem. How many of the promises based on the presentation can you keep? Because then you add, all right, in order to also have another revenue stream, we're going to do we're going to do freight.
One stop, that's mm-hmm. it. I just checked it. Only one stop.
Yeah, right.
Texas A&M.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Right.
Yeah.
There's got to be an Aggie joke there.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know what it is, but there's got to be an Aggie joke.
Well,
no, nobody's told me a new Aggie joke in 30 years.
An Aggie gets on a train that leaves the station, and the wind is blowing, yeah. And, you know, all that.
That's how they would do it, just one stop.
Mm-hmm. Which is in College Station, so that would be.
And it can't be for a half hour. Must be stop, get in, go.
No, the Aggies are going to have to run to catch the train. They have some pretty fast Aggies, though. I'll tell you that. They're pretty fast. But no, I think therein lies the problem with the presentation and the promise overall, right? I mean, look at high-speed rail in California. Now you look at how the cost has ballooned, skyrocketed. Well, private sector is better at promises, at not breaking promises, mm-hmm. or, you know, at keeping, you know, on schedule or whatever the case may be, but not always. Because when you rely on government, when you have to beat the NIMBY effect for something this big, then you, that which would be a permanent fixture, it's not going to, you know, it's likely not going to go away. It means that at some point, if you can't keep those promises, then certain allowances have to be made. And then that starts affecting the business model. And then all of a sudden, well, we can sell, we can do a contract here. We can move freight on the train. We can, and you have all these other accommodations, which changes the whole dynamic. And I just don't, again, it's okay, great. The private sector wants to build it. I have an issue with eminent domain. I've always had an issue and will likely always have an issue with eminent domain. But you build it, and let's see what happens then.
But as you see here, this is the private sector says this is a niche.
Mm-hmm.
And Ocasio-Cortez, for example, talking about replacing it all. Well, you can't do that because we fly. Think about this. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the interesting thing. Is I didn't think you were going to be in tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm probably not going to be in tonight.
You would text me and mm-hmm. we thought you were going to be gone 2 days.
I was at the airport, but I came here basically straight from the airport.
Right, and you had said before you got on the plane, you said, I'm not going to make it in.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a long day, whatever. And mm-hmm. the decision was, and you and I have talked about this before, that if either of us fly and get in, you know, at 8 o'clock at night and we sleep in the plane at all, well, why not come into work? Because you're just going to be awake anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I came into work and saw your car out there, I'm like, either somebody's here who got Eric's exact same truck
mm-hmm.
or Eric's here, because the last I heard you weren't coming in.
Yeah.
But the fact is, because of the for all the delays and everything else, the consistency of an airliner. You know, you were able to say, okay, yeah, I could probably, you know, come in on time, except for the weather. But mm-hmm. the other differences with airplanes is the fact that for most major cities, one is going off every hour.
Hmm.
Is that, can this be the same for a bullet train? Probably not.
No.
And so you have the fact that, okay, something went wrong. Oh, I can't go till tomorrow. If there's a odds are when you're flying with the airlines, you can get, especially in major airports, you can get to where you want. It seems like the only niche that they're depending on that they can sell to people is the fact that, remember, it's going to take you, if you want to fly from Dallas to Houston and Houston to Dallas,
mm-hmm.
then it's going to take you, you've got to go to the airport, get there an hour and a half before, and then what would be a full hour flight? Mm-hmm. So that's 2.5 hours you're going to have to, because you have to get there an hour and a half before.
Mm-hmm.
Here you get here 10 minutes before you leave, and we've got you there in 90 minutes, and therefore it's 100 minutes versus 2.5 hours. And what's the difference? Getting through security.
Hmm.
Now, that's a niche thing that they're selling, because what they're saying is we're only going to have passive security. If security lines were the same, it'd be a different ball. Now, and probably tarmac time, too, but that's included also in the hour or whatever it would take to get to Houston by plane.
Mm-hmm.
It's not long. And I know, for example, for me, even flying to Houston by plane, at that point, that's just at the verge of, okay, am I going to take my vehicle?
Right.
You know, I look at, for me, you know, living in the Dallas area, you know, going to Houston, going to Austin,
mm-hmm.
going down to the Waco area, even San Antonio, it's like, okay, should I take the plane? And San Antonio and Houston are right at the point of going, I might as well take the plane.
Well, I can drive to Houston in 90 minutes. Not legally, but I can drive in 90 minutes. I mean, when we go down to Galveston, actually, the drive isn't bad at all. I mean, it's 4.5 hours.
Well, it's all
a little bit longer.
Well, it all depends. If you're going to fly down there, and you're going to visit friends or do whatever, then you got to rent a car. You got to go through that. That all takes time in order to do that. You'd have to do the same with train too,
right?
Where you don't have to do that with a vehicle. Mm-hmm. The vehicle you have. And the other thing is, you don't have no wait time. You don't have to drive to the train station. You're in your car by the time you get to the train station. Mm-hmm. You're already 50 miles down the road.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm in that entire span of getting there, getting on, whether it's the train or the plane, and then getting off at the destination, if it's Houston, from Dallas to Houston, and then you get off the plane or train there. You then find your ground transportation, whatever that's going to be, and you're getting to your ultimate destination. Again, I'm 4.5 hours, and I'm still in my car.
Right. Unless, let me ask you this, with the new upcoming generation that doesn't want a car,
mm-hmm.
does Uber change everything?
No, I think it does, actually.
Does Uber change, fact that, look, I can take a train down there and just catch Uber and mm-hmm. go wherever I want, then jump mm-hmm. back on the train again, and it's now, here's the other thing. People say, I want the experience of being on a train. Mm-hmm. For example, I would take if they build this private train from Dallas to Houston, I guarantee one time I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to experience a high-speed train.
I want to experience going 180 miles an hour legally.
Yes. I'll want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just like when I got a chance to be in a race car, when I got a chance to go up with the Thunderbirds, I wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether it's practical for what I wish to do, and that's the whole point. When it comes in, a lot of people will want to, hey, let's you know, see this, let's see what happens. Will businessmen take it on a consistent basis?
Well, see, there's the commuter. I have a nurse who works at different hospitals here in our area. Think about what they could do if they could work, make themselves available, maybe on a weekend or as needed, and they're hundreds of miles away. I could see that happening. And I could see the hospital paying for it, if it came to that.
Yeah,
I would also, by the way, like the opportunity to sleep on a plane. But apparently, coming home from Orlando, which is the home of Disney World, there are a few children on your plane. Lovely children they were. I don't sleep on planes anyway, but it wasn't going to happen.
I'd love to see the business model of this private company, though.
No, well, I would too. What do the numbers look like? Or are they overpromising? Those are the questions.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on DOT drug and alcohol testing, medical and recreational uses. More and more states continue to legalize marijuana, both for medicinal and recreational use. Canada also legalized the drug late last year. But if you are driving through or live in one of the places where it's legal and decide it would be okay to consume marijuana, you would be wrong. Since marijuana use remains illegal under federal law in the U.S. and the trucking industry is federally regulated, drivers are not allowed to use it for recreational or medicinal purposes, and the Americans with Disabilities Act does not require employers to accommodate an employee's use of marijuana. While the laws might differ from state to state, the policy for drivers is clear. Marijuana use violates the DOT drug and alcohol policy, no matter where you are driving. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Crowley. I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90. Red Eye. We'll get your Red Eye.
Hello. Ready? What?
It's Red Eye.
Wait, what?
Did I say ready?
Because I'm not ready.
Gary McNamara.
866-90-RED-EYE.
There you go.
There's so much to talk about. I'm trying to hurry through it all to get it all in. Man, Senator Ed Markey tweeted on the Republicans wanting to have a vote on the Green New Deal.
Yeah.
This is the most beautiful thing ever. that we will get to. Also, will you be angry if the president signs the bill and only gets 55 miles and $1.3 billion for the wall? We'll get to that. Your calls and comments. The New York governor meeting with the president, too. That was
the what?
The New York governor, Cuomo meeting with the president.
Yeah.
The whole thing. That and more on the way. Yeah. Plus your calls and comments, 866-90-RED-EYE.
If you don't like what they're saying, then you can't handle the truth. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. I just absolutely love this.
Yeah.
Ed Markey, who co-sponsored the Green New Deal for the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that introduced it into the Senate.
Right.
Ocasio-Cortez into the House.
Mm-hmm.
Here's his response to Mitch McConnell saying, okay, yeah, we're going to have a vote on it.
Right.
You introduced it? This isn't a new Republican trick. By rushing a vote on the Green New Deal resolution, Republicans want to avoid a true national debate and kill our efforts to organize. We're having our first national conversation on climate change in a decade. We can't let Republicans sabotage it. All right, who wishes to tear this tweet apart?
Yes.
How many ways can we tear this apart? This isn't a new Republican trick. And I knew this was going to happen. This is a Republican trick. We've introduced a bill to vote on it. Now they want to vote on it. It's a Republican trick. They don't want to debate it. Excuse me. We've been told the debate is over, have we not?
Well, the consensus is in.
The consensus is in.
Years ago, CNN's Miles O'Brien told me that. So I gave up then. There is no more debate.
Right. The consensus is in. We're told there is no debate.
Right. Well, and do you believe in those items or not? You co-sponsored the bill. Right. You brought it up. You introduced it in the Senate. What would be the problem with voting on it? Oh. Maybe that some of your fellow Democrats are going to go, I'm not about to vote on this.
Well, let's put it this way. All the presidential candidates that have so far supported the bill, they now have to go on record as supporting the bill.
Exactly.
I love this, though, because here it is. Ed Markey. This isn't a new Republican trick. By rushing a vote on the Green New Deal resolution, Republicans want to avoid a true national debate and kill our efforts to organize. We're having the first national conversation on climate change in a decade. We can't let Republicans sabotage it. By the way, what kind of a doofus is this guy? Seriously. I mean, again, you know, Ocasio-Cortez, she's new.
Right.
Ed Markey's not new.
No.
He's an old guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't he realize how idiotic this tweet is? So he tweets this out, and I start going through some of the responses, thinking it's Ed Markey. He's going to have a ton of support, right?
Right, right.
Saying, yes, it's a Republican trick. It's a Republican trick. We introduced something, a resolution for you to vote on, and now you're going to vote on it? You're tricking us. Well, then don't introduce the resolution.
Don't introduce it.
Here it is, some of the responses. It's your bill. Here's another one. You sponsor this legislation. Debate and votes are the next logical step in the process.
Right.
Have a staffer look up, quote, I'm just a bill from Schoolhouse Rock for you. And then some guy responds to him saying, Mike, this guy's name is Mike. You just won the tweet of the day.
Right. Yeah. Well, because here's the thing. It's a resolution anyway.
Yes.
Right? It's non-binding. What's the problem? Here's my question. Mr. Markey, Senator Markey, why aren't you calling your Democrat friends, especially those in the Senate now that have announced they're running, and tell them, we need your leadership on this. Mitch McConnell is trying to pull a fast one. Let's show him. I mean, you do believe in it, right? You believe in everything in this Green New Deal, right?
I wouldn't sponsor and introduce a bill unless I believed in it. And then there's more. There's a ton of these responses. With only 12 years left, time is of the essence.
Right.
We don't have time for debate. There's only 12 years left.
Mm-hmm.
Dear God, man, we only have 12 years. We need to vote on this now to save the world. Wait, what? Your job is to introduce legislation and then vote on it. What's the point of all of this?
Right.
Calling for a vote on my bill is sabotage.
It's bizarre.
Can you please explain the part of how we're going to replace 100% of air travel with trains? I'm struggling to understand how citizens in Hawaii and Alaska will travel by train only. Somebody responded to it. They'll swim to the mainland.
Right, exactly.
They will be very healthy.
Yeah.
And then it's just a ton of, you know, different responses. People are dying. I thought we only have 12 years left. I thought this was about setting goals. Are you against voting against your own goals?
Well, because if you talk about a resolution, right, that is me going on record saying, and it's non-binding, it's not going to cost anything but time at this point, right? But it's you going on record saying, I believe this. Certainly you believe, Mr. Markey, that there is enough support from your friends, your Democratic friends, to at least show that as a party, you're unified on this, right? I mean, it's not going anywhere. What's the harm in them saying, yes, we support and officially vote on this resolution?
Wow. I mean, it's just when you just see the responses to it on his, you know, his page, Twitter page,
right.
And it's just
right.
It's just amazing.
Hmm.
This is the beauty of it. What did we say earlier? What you're seeing now is happening. Since now the Democrats have power in the House, you see that all the white noise around the president is now moving into the background. Now the Democrats are coming out and proposing what they want. Another story yesterday, I saw Kamala Harris proposing $500 a month. The Democrats now, the candidates for president, promoting the things that they wish to believe. All these giveaways. So now we're talking the substance of the issues. Look at this. We've had the discussion. Medicare for all. Remember just a month ago, everybody wants Medicare for all. Oh, only 16% want Medicare for all if it gets rid of private insurance. They want a choice. People actually want a choice is what they're looking for. Oh, we're having all of this discussion on the substance of actual issues here. That's what we want.
Right.
And this is confusing the Democrats to the point where Senator Markey introduces a resolution and the next step is to vote on that resolution and you can have debate on it and he doesn't wish to do it. He's calling it a Republican trick.
Yeah.
Do you have the courage of your own convictions?
Well, again, what is it that you believe?
Right.
Well, because if you've got the support from all of those, what was the number? 60? You know, all together?
Yes.
Then what's the harm of all of them standing up? What are you afraid of?
Well, I didn't know the Democrats wanted the debate. Now, the Democrats want to debate with the Flat Earth Society?
I guess.
that debate has been the... We've been told there is no debate, and now we're being told they need more time to debate.
Well, and if your colleagues on the left in the Senate, if some of them vote no on it, then you can call them out, right? I mean, they're
right.
Just as wrong as anybody else.
Right. They're pro-doomed.
Right. Part of the establishment. The Democratic swamp. We all know that the swamps aren't going to survive because of global warming.
Exactly, the swamps.
Hello?
Swamps,
I mean,
gone
so
too.
Come on. This,
I'm telling you, well, look, I know.
Look how vocal they have been in recent days about this. All of a sudden, you're looking to make it official and go on record, and then you don't want to be on record? You've been talking out of both sides of your face for, what, about a week now?
Yep.
Along with your colleague over in the House. Now you don't want to go on record? You're on every other record. You don't want to be on this record? It's just bizarre.
This is why the Republicans and the president need to keep the Democrats talking about the issues.
Yeah, right.
Keep the sideshow out of it. Just talk the issues. And this and the reason is not that we care at all about the progress of this country. Somebody's going to take that
and use
that again.
We're the station that cares.
They're going to use that against me. We don't care about this country progressing at all. We simply want to be able to come into the show, do no work, and be entertained as all heck.
Yes, right. It's like going to a party every night, all night, and never having to go to work.
Right. This is for us. This is for us. We don't have alcohol in here, so
no.
This is like... We're staying up all night at a bar.
Exactly.
And we need, you know, like Ed Markey's comment is the guy who is the drunk at the end of the bar just blathering out stuff.
Right.
I think this, I think this, I think this, I
right.
think this, I think this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then we should do that. No! Why are you trying to back me into a corner?
Yeah, exactly. You're all out to get me.
You're all out to get me. No, we just agreed with you. It's that
your,
proves you're all out to get me.
It's your bill.
Prove it.
Oh my gosh.
Look, they don't have a clue on the substance of the issues they wish to be able to. They've been able to do it. Because of all the white noise surrounding the president, they've been able to say anything.
Yeah.
And now that they're in power, what they say actually is on record.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of the news cycle.
Yes.
And it's not Trump every day. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah, Trump said that, but he said it before. What did you say over there? What? Yeah. Oh, really? Oh, okay. That becomes part of the news cycle now. Mm. Oh, we didn't expect that. We expected that we could put forth anything and nobody would pay attention to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's it. We thought we could just go out and promote something, this big fantasy for 2020 and never have to actually deal with it. Because he's talking about, you know, they don't want to have the debate. Well, actually, that's part of the process.
Right. Part of the process is having the debate. You can
mm-hmm.
have the debate.
Right.
You can, in fact, you can go right on the floor before the American people, because before they would pass this bill, there would be time for debate.
Exactly.
Do we have to tell you, Senator Markey, how this whole thing goes?
Right. Does he not know what the process is?
Do you understand that you are a senator? Do you understand this whole concept here?
Right. Maybe the majority leader, Senator McConnell, can fill him in on how
yeah.
it works.
Could somebody explain, one of the constituents of Senator, could you please call him up and say, look, do you understand what you're doing? You understand what the job is here?
Yeah.
Have you looked at the job description lately?
You need to go back to
God. I get paid for this.
Well,
I get paid for this. I get at the end of the month. Twice a month, we get paychecks for this.
Remember when I said, you know, maybe somebody inside the White House back when General Kelly was the showrunner, chief of staff, and we said maybe they could give the president a phone that would look like he's on Twitter, but it's a fake Twitter. I keep thinking one day. our staff is going to come in and say, we punked you guys. We gave you a fake Twitter feed and all these fake stories. They're not real. It didn't actually happen.
This is a dream.
Yeah, right. We're going to wake up and go, dang it. We've got to go back to work now.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up on the top of the hour, we'll get to your calls and comments. Democrats now coming out about having a vote on the Green New Deal. Now they say that this is a trick from Republicans. We'll get to some of your calls and comments on it. They introduced the bill. Mitch McConnell says, okay, you introduced it. Let's debate and have it. And they claim, no, we wish to now have more of a debate on the bill. You're keeping us from debating it on an issue that they've already stated that the debate is over, that yeah. There is a consensus.
Yeah, right.
And so this is truly bizarre what's going on now on the left when the Republicans say, okay, we're going to give you exactly what you want, and now they say we don't want it. Can anybody on the left explain this to us?
Yeah, I don't get it.
We would love you to. Plus, the union's now coming out against the Green New Deal, saying this could affect our jobs.
Yeah, you think? You're not the only ones, but the union, which party do they back? I keep forgetting.
And you see the tweets of the president yesterday, and it looks like he's moving in the direction of he's going to approve what the congressional negotiators have come up with, which would be $1.3 billion and 55 miles for the wall.
Yeah.
That and more coming up, plus your calls and comments, too. 866-90-RED-EYE.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Are you ready for this?
I don't know.
I want to play this here because this was yesterday breaking news on MSNBC.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
And now, don't go. No, no. You're going to want to hear this breaking news on MSNBC.
Okay. All right.
Here we go.
We want to get to some breaking news right now. NBC News exclusive reporting on the Senate Intelligence Committee, their investigation into Russian election interference and what they have and have not uncovered. NBC's Ken Delanian has just jumped in front of a camera to join me with his new reporting. So, Ken, what are you hearing? What are you learning?
Hallie, after 2 years and interviewing more than 200 witnesses, the Senate Intelligence Committee has not uncovered any direct evidence of a conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russia. That's according to sources on both the Republican and the Democratic side of the aisle, Hallie. And careful viewers and readers will note that Senator Richard Burr, the chairman of the Intelligence Committee who leads this probe, essentially said that in an interview with another network last week. But what I've been doing since then is checking with my sources on the Democratic side to understand the full context of his remarks, because that was essentially a partisan comment from one side. But this is a bipartisan investigation, and what I found is that the Democrats don't dispute that characterization.
There you go. Well, look, as we've said all along, when people have accused us of, you guys are just being partisan, we said, no, we're looking at it from an investigative point of view. And the first thing that you do with any investigation is say, what is the allegation to begin with? And when you never have a specific allegation of wrongdoing, which you've never had in this case, except the generalized, he colluded with the Russians to hack the elections. How?
Right.
What was the behavior? One of the reasons we were always against the special counsel is because we said nobody can identify what the crime is.
Right.
Or what the potential crime is. What did they do? And so this is no surprise to us, because over two years into this Well, actually, when you think about it, because the FBI investigation has been going on since what? July of 2016? So we're 2.5 years into the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can even identify what the alleged crime is.
Right.
There isn't even a charged allegation. The president, we believe, did this.
Well, I mean, show me where any American broke the law regarding the election itself. You know, you have the charges on those 13 Russians. Well, by the way, we'll see where that goes. Mueller charged them. Well, see, he had to pass the indictment so he could see what's in it. He charges the Russians. They come back with American lawyers, and they want discovery and exculpatory evidence. And, sorry, we can't do that, Your Honor. We're not ready. Of course you're ready. You indicted. But this whole mess, this entire thing, has been one political show after the other. The indictments coming down are about what? Many of the things... lying during the process, which was after the election.
Well, when Senator Burr said it last couple days ago, I don't know if it was last week or whatever, but the reporter said last week, what I found interesting is you didn't hear debates from other senators from the Democrat side. I don't know if you and I can't remember if I talked with you or somebody else about that off the air and said, that's really interesting that a day or two had gone by and you don't hear Democrat senators coming. That's not how we looked at it. Not like you saw in the House Intelligence Committee, where Devin Nunes would say one thing, and Adam Schiff, who has been proved wrong over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, would come out and say something different. You didn't hear that. What you heard really from the Democrats was silence on it, which is why the reporter was stating that's why we had to go to Democrats, because it could be viewed as partisan just coming from one side.
Right.
And again, we're not surprised by it. I did see the president, though, and I didn't mention this on yesterday's show when you were gone, just there were other stuff we were talking about, but I did see where he did tweet out that the only collusion has been the Democrats. And we have said all along he should say that.
Right.
Because as we have talked about, collusion, whether illegal or illegal, the only collusion that you can, the only point where you can draw lines and say that there was collusion with the Russians to change the outcome of the election is with the Democrats. And when we've laid it out, as we have hundreds of times over the last year and a half, because we feel it's important to do so, because it's something that I still bring up to people. They go, what are you talking about? And when you lay it out, you say, well, the DNC and the Hillary campaign funneled money to the law firm, Perkins Coie, who funneled the law firm to a group called Fusion GPS, and they do opposition research for a political party. They look to get, do research in order to hurt or help a particular political party. Most of the time they're doing opposition research, which means we'll get you information that will hurt the other party. That's what they do. And so the DNC and the Hillary campaign gave the money to a law firm, and they passed that money or a portion of that money on to the opposition research group that gave it to the former British spy, Christopher Steele, who then got information, unverified, mostly false information. That comes from Michael Isakoff, who put out one of the stories in 2016, that then was used. They wanted to use it to help destroy the Trump campaign, and when they couldn't do it, used that unverified, mostly false information in order to try to destroy the legitimacy of an American election. And then on the other side, took that false information and got a secret warrant, the FBI and the Department of Justice and the intelligence agencies under the Obama administration took that information to get a secret warrant to spy on the President Trump's campaign. Nobody is debating any of those facts that I just laid out. No one. We're still trying to find out more information on that. We now know that Andrew Weissman, who's part of the Mueller investigation, mm-hmm. knew early on about, as we knew in August of 2016, that information came out here last week, that he knew early on about the dossier, which means I don't know if we're ever going to see it. I saw the story yesterday. Mueller may never say anything. He may never speak to Congress, may never say anything. Just say, look, I'm a prosecutor. Here are the indictments. Those are the indictments in the report. We didn't find anything. Short report and boom, gone. Never speaks to Congress. Never does anything.
Evidence of anything here. There's nothing to pursue.
I'm a prosecutor. Those are the people we prosecuted.
Right.
We didn't find evidence of any type of collusion. My point is, if Andrew Weissman early on knew of the dossier, then he knew that they used it. He understood that they used it in order to get the warrant. If the Mueller investigation doesn't go through all of that, they will forever be, in my opinion, the history books will look at it and say they were not fair in that investigation because they did not go after where the collusion actually was, which was with the Democrats, not the Republicans.
And it would be purely politically motivated. And which is interesting, if you introduce this idea being thrown around in recent days about just closing the book and saying, well, we're done. There's no more indictments. The indictments that we have handed down are all the indictments that we see here, and we're done. No report. We've concluded our investigation and do not plan any further indictments. If that's the case, that is also an out, because we said, as you just mentioned, we've said it numerous times, if you don't include the Hillary campaign and the DNC essentially funneling money to a foreign agent to get the dossier information that was unverified from the people close to the Kremlin, from the Russians, in order to influence the election. If you don't include that part of it, and you issue, and he does issue a report on the other side of it, and kind of wags his finger but does not go as far as an indictment, and that idea has been thrown around too, then it's just political hackery.
Well,
it's nothing short of that.
And if you don't believe what we're saying here, if you disagree with our opinion, let's reverse it. The RNC and the Trump campaign funneled money to a former British spy to get information on Hillary Clinton from the Kremlin to destroy her possibility of winning the 2016 election. Would that be a major news story today?
It would be the story.
It would be the only story.
It would be one of the biggest political stories in U.S. history.
Right. And I'm glad the president, I mean, took him long enough, but the president's finally bringing that up.
Mm-hmm.
Look, the only collusion. Now, to be honest, he has been bringing it up for the last couple of months, but I'm glad he's still bringing it up now. But that is, you know, yeah. but we have said, he should have been talking about this a year from now and laying it out. His administration should have been laying out. Here it is.
Yeah.
And talking to everybody so you can't. And this is what you do if you are somebody who's representing and working for the president. You go on every one of these shows. You say, excuse me, here is the only collusion. Why aren't you people talking about that?
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about something that you can't even line out what we've done. Everybody knows and you know. You know that the Hillary campaign, nobody's debating the facts. You're not debating the facts. Why aren't you talking about the Hillary campaign paying money to a foreign national former spy to get dirt from the Kremlin that wasn't true against a candidate?
Right.
You know if it was reversed, you'd be going crazy. Challenge every single reporter on it. They never did that. That was a mistake, I think, by the administration for never doing it. We did it all the time. It's something that we've talked about for, I don't know, 2 years to zero debate. Maybe, you know, like I said, the only response we get occasionally is people just cursing at us or whatever, but nobody can challenge us on that because you can't.
No.
It's obvious. It's out there. And if it's collusion you're looking for, because remember, even the Democrats said, well, it doesn't matter whether the collusion was illegal, legal or illegal, you shouldn't be colluding with the Russians. Fine. But if you talk about the money that was transferred to Christopher Steele, that's campaign money being funneled and hidden and going to a foreign national with campaign money, that rights that has been pointed out many times before is a campaign violation.
Mm-hmm.
Campaign money violation.
Right.
Campaign finance violation.
Right.
At that particular point. So if you're outraged about the general broad allegations against Trump, you should be absolutely outraged about what we know is fact from the Hillary campaign and the DNC.
Mm-hmm.
If not, you're a political hack. That's all you are.
Right.
And we stated it from the very, very beginning. If Trump broke the law, if President Trump broke the law, should be prosecuted.
Yep. Needs to be held accountable.
If he colluded with the Russians, I'd like to know he colluded with the Russians, just like I'd like to know if Hillary colluded with the Russians, which we know through the funneling of the money, they did.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've said for the last year and a half on this, since we've been promoting this particular segment of collusion, tell us where we're wrong. And if you're a Democrat, you can't.
Side of it is documented.
Right.
There's no one even debating that. Now, they're not talking about it, but they're certainly not debating it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio, and he is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. The good news, though, from yesterday is that airline travel will be around in California in 10 years.
Oh, okay. All right.
As we know, with Gavin Newsom talking about the high-speed rail between San Francisco and L.A. is dead, it will still apparently continue. I mean, that's what he seemed to say between Bakersfield and Merced, which we're trying to figure that out, 163 miles between a population center of roughly 100,000 and another population center of 400,000. We're wondering the practicality of that. Now, it does go through Fresno, if that makes a difference.
Yeah.
Is 99 there clogged all the time? I don't know. It's now, that's the only place where you might be able to stop some of the commuter flights that might go once or twice a day or
right.
maybe between.
Yeah. Or some of the Cessnas that travel between.
I still have the question on that one, saying what did he mean by that? Does that mean it's just going to be a high-speed rail from those two cities? Because you would sit there and say to yourself, and that's how we got on the practicality of the privately funded high-speed rail bullet train that's supposed to go between Dallas and Houston, how we got on that last hour. And that's, you know, privately funded. And if that ever comes to fruition, and they keep saying, I saw the last article that was a month ago saying they still expect it to be up by 2025.
Right.
And we've said we'd like to see that business model. Well, if there's a business model there that we're questioning and would like to see, I definitely would like to see the business model of that remaining line in California. Show me how you're going to make money there. You don't have to do it. That's government funded, but that doesn't seem to make sense.
No.
Hopefully the governor will clarify those comments. But with Governor Newsom in his State of the State address, all in all stating that, you know, hey, sorry, we can't do this whole project.
Yeah. And by the way, he says in his State of the State address, you know, he says right now, there simply isn't a path to get from Sacramento to San Diego. Actually, there is. There's not a high-speed rail path. But, yeah, there is a way to get, you know, there's. If you look at the demand, where would the demand be? And by the way, the governor talking about, well, we're going to, you know, it's all going to be on hold until we can get more federal funding or private dollars involved. You would have had the private dollars involved already. if they believed, if the private sector believed there was enough demand to support it. I mean, we're looking at the, you know, the situation in Texas. Clearly, at least we're being told that the private sector has full confidence here. They say they do. Otherwise, they wouldn't put their money down, right? So in California, the private sector should be running to the state capitol to say, here you go. Knocking on the door there at the governor's mansion or the state capitol building, saying, here you go. Come on, we want to get involved. Let's see that happen. That will give you some indication as to where the demand might be. Why would you have it? Why would you have it in such a short span? 162 miles span?
I have no idea. Somebody has to explain that to us. Maybe, as I said,
I don't know what I'm missing.
We might be missing something.
Here's your forecast.
In the south, rains from yesterday pushing eastward will clear out for places like Mobile. Sunny and 62 today. Rain will be ending in New Orleans. Sunny and 61 degrees. For Atlanta, things are clearing out. 54 for the high today. 60 tomorrow. In the northeast and mid-Atlantic, Washington and Baltimore will see the return of sunshine today. Quite the different story as you move into just north of there in New York, where a winter weather advisory is out for much of the state. Rain and sleet expected in Manhattan, high today 43. For Boston, 2 to 4 inches of snow fell yesterday, light flurries overnight. In the Chicagoland area, watch for freezing rain and snow overnight. In the Pacific Northwest, for the states of Washington and Oregon, conditions favor additional snow to accumulate, even down into the lower elevations, as moisture associated with a low-pressure system lingers through the day. The National Forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Exposing BS Nightly. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Let's go to Ray in Fresno. We were talking about Governor Gavin Newsom coming out and saying that for the most part, the majority of the high-speed rail project for the state of California between L.A. and San Francisco is dead, but there's still one part left. Ray, now, is it, you're in Fresno, so you're right where the high-speed rail would go, right?
Yeah, they're disrupting all of our traffic up and down the valley from Fresno. The reason they're not getting rid of this piece of it is that most of it is already built.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Well, and there's also...
Yeah, they've got rails.
And the governor mentioned $3.5 billion in federal money that would have to go back if they didn't do something. If they didn't do something, some part of this, they would have to send that. And he mentioned it. He said, I don't want to send this $3.5 billion back to Donald Trump. He said that.
Right. Right. So his idea is, might as well go forward with this piece of it.
Right.
It's never made sense for us because we have two major rail lines that run through this area up and down the valley, the same direction as the high-speed rail.
Well, Eric, you just told me you were reading out of the Fresno newspaper.
Yeah,
what did it say?
The Fresno Bee even points out that this could be a real boon for Amtrak if the, you know, if the high-speed rail never materializes. I mean, they make that point right in the middle of the story that they did on this, and I thought, well, that's a great point because, you know, then that demand goes back to where those, and I'm guessing, Ray, that one of those two lines you're talking about is Amtrak. Is that right?
You know? Yeah, it's one of the lines that the Amtrak train runs on.
Yeah, right.
Obviously, both of those lines are freight lines, and then they run in Amtrak down the one of those tracks.
Well, yeah. I'm assuming if that's the only part of the line that would be left, there have to be a lot of people questioning the eventual financing of this and the customer demand to use that 163-mile line.
If you go down to the Amtrak station on any given day and go down there, you'll find that not a whole lot of people take the Amtrak.
Right, right, yeah. I mean, I was joking about the ice storm and the winter storm there in the Chicago area that, the cold weather, actually, that shut down Amtrak for a couple of days. And I joked that tens and tens of people would be affected. But, I mean, that's kind of, you know, it's obviously hyperbole, but that is kind of the effect of it. And if you're talking about the governor mentioning private sector, we'll wait for more federal money or the private sector to give us more money. The private sector would have been at the door a long time ago. This would have happened a long time ago. Look, I'm not fully confident the thing in Texas isn't going to have down the road, if it ever gets done, isn't going to have some public money in it. And that's my concern. But you look at this and it's now they're just kind of putting their hands out seeing, well, they're stopping the project. And thanks for your input, Ray. We greatly appreciate it. They're basically stopping this huge boondoggle of a public project. It was just, it was, well, even the current governor talking about there really wasn't a lot of oversight and transparency with this whole thing. You're not talking about a conservative Republican here throwing governor, his predecessor, under the bus. It's Gavin Newsom. Doesn't get much more liberal than Gavin Newsom.
Well, the timing of it, the same week of the new Green Deal,
right,
that we need to have a high-speed rail, that would have to be government-sanctioned.
Right.
All across the United States, think about this, to replace all air travel.
Right, yeah. Well, wow. And on top of that, what else is being discussed right now? What's big? Well, has been big for several weeks. The funding for the wall. In a sanctuary state where you have a number of people, and I can't quantify this, but you know there are a number of Democrats that don't agree with the sanctuary state policy. They may want looser immigration, legal immigration standards, but they don't agree with sanctuary state. And they really don't have a problem with a wall, slats, barrier, fence, whatever you want to call it, on the border, knowing they already have one on their southern border. And then you look at what's going on here in the state of the state address from the new governor. And he points out how much of a waste this was. He even mentions the $3.5 billion that would go back to Donald Trump if we didn't use it for zero purpose. That's got to really, I believe that's really got to get under people's skin in California, hearing that when the back and forth on the wall has been going on for several weeks.
You make a great point, because I'm sure, and Ray is probably one of those people who we just talked to, there has to be a ton of people in California just saying, excuse me, you got $3.5 billion that you don't want to send back to Trump?
Right.
That you're saying let's put into a high-speed rail system that nobody is going to use?
Right.
That it's just going to be a boondoggle because there is no type of any kind of sane even government business model that the ridership demand would ever be there.
Right.
And yet you'd rather blow that money on that for nothing. But when it comes to illegal immigration and border security, you're doing everything to make it easier for illegal immigration into our state. And you really don't want any money, and as you know, the National Guards.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, there has to be a ton. There has to be, you know, how many people? What is it? 40 plus million now in California. Mm. I don't know what it is, but I'm sure. Let's put it this way: I wonder if you took a poll and Trump wasn't president on illegal immigration and what Democrats thought, and on sanctuary cities, what and you kept Trump's name out of it. What the actual numbers would be in the polls of people pro being sanctuary state or not.
And the governor mentioned that and mentioned it specifically, saying $3.5 billion and mentioned his name specifically and didn't say the word president in front of it. He said, I don't want to send that $3.5 billion back to Donald Trump. You just made it personal.
Yeah.
You just made yourself a lot smaller in that equation. Because you're not looking out for the people of your state. You're only pointing out the hatred for a person. Is that governing? Is that leading? Is that leadership?
No.
You know, he talked about it in his inauguration speech, a number of things about, you know, coming together, rising above. Yeah, well, you're not rising at all. At all. You're being petty. Like most of all of you that are far left and are in a position of power, you're being petty. Your hatred for one guy is driving all of that. You'd rather waste $3.5 billion of not just Californians' money, but taxpayers from all over the U.S. on nothing with no purpose, no demand, than seen writing a check back to the federal government. Oh, I'm sorry, Donald Trump.
Right.
Way to rise above.
Yeah, he made it. He made it personal.
Yes,
he made
deliberately pointed that out.
Right.
He didn't say. He made it a point to focus on that for a moment because he believed that was a positive for him.
Yep.
Wow.
It might be in California.
Well,
might be a political positive for him.
Well,
it's never been about the money. Look, it's the whole thing about the what Ted Cruz is promoting now.
Right.
And everybody jumped on that, and we said we have to say it again, stop it. The El Chapo thing.
Right. You know, the
14 billion.
Yeah, money.
You know, and as we said, he brought it up a couple of weeks ago, and we like, stop it. And all of a sudden, it rose again, and everybody on social media, Ted Cruz has it. No, he doesn't. Congress would still have to vote on it.
Right.
It's not about the money. It's the fact that the Democrats, even if the money is there, which it is there, won't appropriate it. Doesn't matter where it comes from.
Here's my question. You touched on something with the governor mentioning Donald Trump. In California, he may get away with that. But just like the Kavanaugh hearings, you think that you're doing something and you may be able to get away with it in your district or your state, in the case of the Senate. But what kind of damage are you inflicting for your party in 2020? I'm just asking a question.
Yeah. More of your calls and comments coming up, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We played the audio cut earlier of MSNBC doing the breaking news on the Senate Intelligence Committee, finding no direct collusion with the administration with Russia. We go to Chad in Knoxville, Tennessee. Chad, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Eric and Gary. How are you guys doing?
Very good.
All right. First, I want to say I really appreciate your show. I listen every chance I get. I appreciate that you guys are not so in love with the Republican Party that it sways your analysis on stories that you guys review, and I really appreciate that. I did want to offer a little bit of constructive criticism. A couple segments ago, like you said, you guys were reviewing the Russian collusion stuff that's going on in the news.
Mm-hmm.
And if you only listen to that segment, it seemed like, you know, you only focused on the DNC and Hillary campaign and what was there. And there are certainly, I agree with every word of it. It's factual and you can't debate it. However, you know, I believe it was Eric. So one of you made the comment that if Trump had colluded with Russia, you would want him to be prosecuted.
Yeah, we both believe that. Yeah,
we don't know.
If Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the elections,
what we said was if he broke the law.
If he broke the law, because collusion, there's illegal collusion, which really collusion isn't a crime. Mm-hmm. The actual crime would be you are conspiring with the Russians to commit election fraud.
Or anyone to commit
election fraud. And that's why we said collusion to hack the election. Trying to get opposition research, as we said before, the only crime that you can find besides what they did with the information, from the FISA warrant, you know, how they got the FISA warrant with the dossier, the only crime there is possible perjury at that point, that they sold it to the federal or to the secret court as being intelligence when they knew that it was not. And that's what, for example, Trump's lawyer said. The only other crime would be paying the foreign national, as we stated, that would be an election finance crime right there, paying a foreign national with campaign money. Actual getting the information is not a crime.
No,
there is no crime there.
That's right. And I'm not saying that there is a crime. I'm not saying that at all. I just think that one piece of the story that is left out, and one of you had also mentioned, you know, all of these facts are not debated, they're just not talked about. And I think that also on kind of the Republican side, conservative side, whatever, that's left out and not talked about is that there was intent to get for opposition research with Don Jr. at the Trump Tower meeting with the Russians.
Not illegal.
We haven't been afraid to talk about that ever.
Talked about Veselnitskaya, the emails and the meeting itself and what came of that and what was looked into with that entire thing and what happened. Well, turns out that someone told Trump Jr. that the meeting was going to be about something. He thought, okay, great, I'll bite. They went, they talked about adoption, nothing came up. Even if they talked about opposition, anything that they may have had on Hillary, that in and of itself is not against the law.
Right. Every single campaign is looking for opposition research, whether they get it domestically or internationally. What we have talked about, and we have framed it in the discussion, that the Democrats said, they came out and said they believe that Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the actual election machines in 2016. Now, they use the term colluded, but that would be collusion. That would be actually you were involved in a conspiracy with the Russians to commit election fraud. The word collude was used, but it's actually conspiracy to commit election fraud. There was no evidence that Trump ever did that. There was never any to this day. You only go and get a special prosecutor when you can identify a crime, not a general or that we believe he did something wrong with the Russians. That is the basis, and that is the base discussion of this all.
Right.
So, no, we've never been afraid to talk about what happened at the meeting because nothing illegal was done.
And through this all, we have talked about time and time again. No law was broken. If it was just political opposition research on either side.
Right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.